It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, glad you could be here. The results of a statewide survey published in recent days by the State Department of Public Instruction, they indicate Wisconsin children are experiencing significant mental health challenges. 4 out of 5 student respondents who identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual say they have anxiety challenges. We examine efforts to improve the well-being of Wisconsin kids with the State Office of Children's Mental Health. Join in by calling with your questions about anxiety, depression, other struggles that kids are working through, 800-642-1234. Linda Hall is director of the State Office of Children's Mental Health. Linda, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Good morning. It's really a pleasure to be with you. I wish the circumstances could be a little bit better in terms of children's mental health, but such an important issue to talk about.
Such an important issue. What was your reaction to this risk behavior survey when you pored over the numbers?
Well, unfortunately, the data was not very new to us. The conditions of anxiety and depression for our youth has been evident to us for some time. It was exacerbated by the pandemic, but the trend for increasing anxiety and depression, lack of belonging at school, suicide increases, those have been on the rise for a decade.
Because the results estimate more than half of students are experiencing problems with anxiety. It can't be just the pandemic effects. What is causing this pervasive anxiety?
Well, this is really a multifaceted problem. We know that a major portion of it is the stress that families are under, economic and other kinds of housing stress, the ability to pay, you know, the basic needs that their families have. That stress gets passed on to kids. We do know that kids are very anxious about their requirements at school. They feel a lot of pressure to do really well in school, to be able to get into a college, to get the financial support that they need to go to college. So those are factors. Then we know that we have a shortage of mental health professionals, so that when kids do have symptoms and their symptoms are recognized, whether that's at school or by their parents, there's the access to mental health treatment is not what it needs to be. So there's just a lot of factors turning into this. And of course, I'm sure what's on the minds of many people is whether social media makes a difference. And we do believe that it does make a difference, that some social media is okay, but if you're on it too much, it's going to affect your mental well-being. And there's information out there that did not help kids feel better about themselves. So we really look at this, the number one thing for us to do is to help kids understand their mental health, have the access to services, and for all of us to work on connecting them and supporting them and helping them feel like they belong.
Linda Hall is here, directs the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health. As we look at the youth mental health crisis in Wisconsin and some new numbers, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Linda, why are state health authorities having either trouble or having difficulty making inroads in lowering anxiety among children?
Well, it is these factors in terms of the stress that they feel mm-hmm. at school, the stress that their families are under that affects them. We know, especially during the pandemic, that was a problem for kids. We know that the pandemic disrupted kids' connections with other kids, and those peer connections are really important. They start being important in preschool, and they continue to grow in importance until when you get to high school. We were looking at figures recently, national figures, that show that quality peer relationships for teens are the most important predictor of how they're going to be mentally well as adults. And so those connections that were disrupted during the pandemic have aggravated everything. I think that we know that at schools, educators, everybody in the school is recognizing that kids are coming with a lot of stress that's not being taken care of other places, and they are trying to address that. But the situation is dire. It's extreme, and our schools don't have enough resources to be able to do everything that they could to address it.
I was struck. I'm going to just jump in here. I mean, something that jumped off the page for me was, 80% of student respondents who identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual having anxiety challenges. It also brings up whether, the issues that we have seen, the courtroom issues about LGBTQ lawsuits over gender identity policies and, the debate over calling students their preferred pronouns and the clash around sex education. How do these political debates manifest in your mind? How do they manifest in mental health of youth?
Well, you're right to bring that up. This is a very big problem when we look at the figures for kids in general are concerning, but when you break it down and look at what's happening to LGBT and questioning youth, their anxiety and their depression and their suicide thoughts are off the charts, just huge. And we know that these debates that are going on with adults around these issues, and that the ways that they play out in some schools aggravate the system, the mental health of these kids.
Governor Evers directing federal funding to provide $30 million for an initiative that provides school-based mental health services in K-12 schools. Is Wisconsin now providing enough access to mental health services with the funds that are being put toward this issue?
The funds that the governor has been able to direct to mental health in the schools is extremely important. Schools are picking up on that. They're doing everything that they can. They're increasing training for teachers and school staff, which is what we hear from youth is the most important thing. They want people at school to be able to talk with them about mental health and be able to have conversations and support them. That is important. Their funds are being used to help kids get to mental health treatment when it's necessary. They're all very important. It's just that the demand is so huge that we have not yet fully resourced schools to address everything that needs to be addressed.
But also to bring up that $30 million, that's ARPA funds. That's one-time money. Is that an issue for future needs in the area of youth mental health care?
Yes, you're correct. The schools tell us that what is really needed is ongoing sustainable funding for mental health. And that's something that we have been talking about. The Department of Public Instruction in its budget proposal for the 23-25 biennium has listed that as the number one thing that they would like to see accomplished for children's mental health, which is to create ongoing sustainable funding for mental health in schools. Because that ARPA funding is helping in terms of trainings and some short-term issues. It's not helping in terms of getting in place the staff that are there on an ongoing basis to help kids.
Linda Hall heads up the State Office of Children's Mental Health. Call in with your questions about the mental health landscape for children, your stories, your experiences. They're welcome as well. 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We take a closer look at how Wisconsin teens are struggling with mental health, bullying, drugs, alcohol, and what policies and programs may deliver kids the support they need. Linda Hall directs the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health. Be part of this conversation. Call in with your questions, comments, 800-642-1234. Nick is here from Madison. Hi, Nick. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Nick. I was calling because I was curious about your thoughts on grading in particular. So, like, obviously, you talked about earlier how academics impact the students' mental health. And a lot of schools have moved towards their competency or a mastery-based model in which, like, we kind of take away the competitiveness of grades and the I'm working towards a grade mentality versus I'm working towards the learning mentality. So it takes a little bit of competitiveness away for, like, you know, what did you get? Or, like, I'm going to have to show my parent this. What is your thoughts or recommendations on schools as far as reducing the level of impact on mental health from grading within school districts?
Nick, thank you. Linda?
Well, I am not an expert educator, so I hesitate to give too much of an opinion on this. But I do think that, you know, reducing competitiveness is something that can help kids see each other differently and see each other's strengths. One of the things that we think is really interesting is a program called Sources of Strength that brings a variety of kids in a school together to get them on a track of recognizing each other's strengths and then building on that. It helps in creating a better climate in the school, and it's also been proven to reduce suicide. So I think that things that allow cohesion and bringing people together, increasing belonging, those are all important to reducing anxiety and depression. So the grading probably would help in that regard.
And that program you said is called Sources of Strength.
Sources of Strength, and you can find it at sourcesofstrength.org.
Thank you. Let's bring in Jody in Fond du Lac. Jody, hi.
Hi there.
What would you like to bring up?
Well, I'm a teacher in a small rural school district, and I serve on the district's mental health team. And so we have school-based mental health services. In fact, we have three providers that come in to our school. But we still have a wait list. And I just know from hearing the frustration of parents that there's just not enough providers of mental health care services. And I'm curious as to what is being done in that profession to attract new providers or, you know, to retain, I guess, who they have. But, you know, if my little district can provide those services and has the funds to do it, I know it's possible. We just are frustrated that we don't have enough mental health care providers to meet the needs of even our little small district.
Jody, thank you so much for bringing that on-the-ground perspective. Linda, what are your thoughts?
Yes, Jody, that I'm glad to hear that you're providing what you can at schools. We actually have a lot of good energy going on in schools in terms of providing some mental health services, connecting kids to providers in the community. But as Jody says, we do not have enough mental health professionals. I think the number one problem is that we have to pay mental health professionals more for people to go into the field. There just are not enough people to address the demand in any part of the state. It's not just in small rural areas. There's just not enough. And, you know, only maybe less than half of kids who have an identified mental illness get access to treatment. And the average length of time between identification of symptoms and actual treatment can be as much as 11 years. So we have a huge problem in terms of the supply of mental health professionals. I think what we need is for people like Jody and other schools, we have to just increase what we were doing in schools, trying to get to kids and support them earlier on before their mental illness gets to a point that they need some professional help. I really see schools as our incubator for how we get through this crisis right now, because although there are people working at the state and national levels to increase the number of mental health professionals, it's not going to help fast enough for the kids who are being challenged right now. So I really, you know, appreciate the folks who are out there making things happen at their school. And I just want to bring up that we also need to listen to youth. They have really good ideas about what needs to happen at school to help them and to help them help their friends who need help. So there are those are the kinds of edges that we are working on while we are also working on how do we increase the number of professionals.
Talking with Linda Hall, Director of the State Office of Children's Mental Health, as we look at youth mental health, the latest numbers, 800-642-1234 to join in. I want to look at the budgetary aspect of this, because Governor Evers will propose a new two-year state budget next year. You know, very soon is next year, right? After, you know, receiving the spending requests from state agencies. Is the Office of Children's Mental Health advocating for changes in the budgetary structure to strengthen support for children?
Well, we're definitely going to be supporting the continued increasing of financial support to these activities that we need at school. And getting access to mental health in general. In terms of school, what we're looking at is that there needs to be sustainable funding, which we touched on earlier. We need funding to train staff and help them be more available to students to talk about this. We also need some insurance changes. You know, we've actually been able to increase the number of students on Badger Care or Medicaid who get access to treatment because we've increased the payment there and the ability for people to pay to access that payment. Right now, our bigger problem is that kids who have insurance, that their insurance won't pay for their treatment at school, which is where the majority of kids get access to treatment. So we need that, and we need insurance to pay for therapists in training, because they are really critical to providing services at school. So those are the kinds of issues that we're going to raise. And the other thing I would mention is increasing youth-led mental health initiatives at schools. Wisconsin, you know, here's a positive note. In Wisconsin, we have a really large and growing number of youth-led programs in schools that are helping kids talk about mental health and figure out where there are resources available to them. And so we want to keep working on that and listen to those youth and get more of their ideas about how we can most effectively address this crisis.
In terms of insurance coverage for mental health services, what impact would Medicaid expansion have on youth mental health?
That is another really important thing. It would, in particular, I believe, it would help with parents who do not have current access to mental health and to health services in general. And we know that many of the students who are identified with anxiety and depression have parents who are struggling with a mental health condition or an addiction. And so the fact that we don't do a good job of taking care of parents is part of the problem that we have. Our kids are struggling because their parents are struggling.
I'm going to zoom in a moment here to Milwaukee, where Children's Wisconsin Hospital opened the state's first walk-in behavioral health clinic to serve children. What do you make of that move?
That is a really important initiative that we are excited about. Children's has been getting into the mental health space in a big way. They have really been advocating for the integration of physical or pediatric support, healthcare and mental health care. And so they opened a walk-in clinic, and it's open from the afternoon and early evenings. Anyone can show up. If you think you have a mental health problem that you want help with, you can go. What we know is that the average age of kids being showing up at that clinic is about 12, and they are pretty equally boys and girls. 80% of them go home safely, so we're avoiding hospitalizations, which can also be traumatic for kids. And then what happens afterwards is that they get the clinic gets connected to their pediatrician, their other caregivers. They get follow-up care, yeah. Right.
Linda, thank you so much for joining us.
It has been my pleasure, and I appreciate your ongoing support of helping us educate people on this important issue.
Linda Hall is director of the State Office of Children's Mental Health. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We dig into the shortage of paramedics, emergency medical technicians, EMTs, how to fund emergency medical services in rural areas, and policy proposals on the horizon. State lawmakers start their work over the next 2 years' state budget after the new year. Call in with your questions about EMS service challenges, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. James Small is EMS Outreach Manager for the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. James, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me this morning.
You've said fire and EMS departments around Wisconsin have struggled to meet service needs for years now. What is the situation facing rural EMS services?
Well, I think right now, not just rural in Wisconsin, but it's some suburban, some urban departments too are experiencing a decline in their ability to provide the service. It's more exasperated in the rural communities because of the distance between services and so on. But what we're seeing out there is that probably about one in three ambulance service providers are not able to provide service 24/7, 365 right now.
Wow.
We're also seeing that an additional about one third of those are in a position where their ability to sustain their own ability to provide that 24/7, 365 service is being compromised in the near future. So we're really entering this time period right now with the ability to provide 911 ambulance service where it's compromised and might be pretty precarious in some areas to get that service.
Some people listening to those statistics might say, I wonder if he's talking about my area, for my home, where I live. A lot of residents in Wisconsin may feel like they live in a rural area, a sparsely populated area. As you look at that data, are there parameters that define where the most critical issues are?
Well, I think when you start looking at like the further north, northern areas of the state in particular, those are areas where you have a EMS provider that tends to be older too, in addition to being shortage of people. And that's just the nature of the demographics of some of the northern counties. And when I say northern, I'm referring to maybe north of Highway 10. Think of like the northern half and the southern half of the state.
Sure.
I think the northern areas are seeing bigger challenges with this because of their geography, older populations. It's harder to find people who are willing to come and volunteer at the services or have the ability to volunteer at the services.
And stop right there on volunteer, because I think we want to get at the heart of this really quickly. How are volunteer shortages an issue here as you look at how EMS is run in Wisconsin?
Well, many of the rural communities are using volunteers or near volunteers to provide that service. And I think what we need to do is step back a little bit and think about what that volunteer is doing. That volunteer is personally subsidizing the cost of that 911 ambulance service to their community. So rather than the taxpayer paying for that, the EMT that's volunteering is taking on that cost personally by providing the service for nearly no cost. And so by doing that, what we're depending on is that there's people that are willing to do that and people that want to come in and provide that service or have the ability to do that. You know, if you're working two other jobs to keep a roof over your head, volunteering down the street at the fire department isn't an easy thing to do.
Mm. Is it also true that some EMS workers spend hundreds of dollars out of pocket for the certifications that are necessary?
Yes. Yes. In some cases, that's what happens, where the department that they want to join does not have the financial ability to pay for their schooling, so they'll pay for it themselves as part of their volunteering process.
So why do rural EMS services get into this situation so heavily dependent on volunteers? Why can't they create a different model?
Well, right now, the ability to generate the revenue to hire full-time staff just doesn't exist in a lot of these communities. You know, there's been levy limits. The shared revenues that come through the state budget are at the same level right now as they were in 1993. Mm-hmm. There just isn't the funding available to do it. And some of the communities don't have the tax base that would support those level of taxes to begin with.
You're the outreach person, and you know your office created this EMS outreach program to help serve rural providers and connect them with resources out there. How is that going?
Well, I think what we've learned in the 6 months since this position started is that the situation's a lot worse than we thought it was. We knew it was bad, but the sheer number of services that are struggling is enormous. And that we're at a situation right now, I think, as a state, is that we have to decide in this next legislative session how we want to support these services. How are we going to provide efficient and cost-effective services across the state? Because it's not just a matter of putting a whole lot of money out there and saying, hey, do good things. We have to have a plan that goes with that so that we can provide the services in an efficient way that respect the taxpayer too. So, you know, going out there, figuring out how do we improve the ability for people to get training.
Oh, James Small, breaking up. I'm just going to reintroduce you here a moment. I'm hoping the line can stabilize as we talk about the challenges of rural EMS services and what they face. James Small is the EMS Outreach Program Manager for the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. James, can you still hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. And so I want to just pick up there on what that looks like for you as you at the start of this next legislative session. If EMS needs a sustainable funding model, what does that look like in a rural area? What does your plan entail?
Well, we know the issue surrounds financial considerations and people. So we need money to be able to pay for people and then get those people trained and get people in place. We've done a sustainability study.
Oh, we're breaking up again. You're going to have to try to start that again. I'm sorry. We're having some of the difficulty here in hearing you.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a financial and a people issue.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done at our office is we've done a study of the 911 ambulance infrastructure, looking at reliability and sustainability measures to try to get a feel for what's actually going on out there. And what we're going to do is provide that data to the state legislature as part of their decision-making process as they go forward through this legislative session, so that we can target into areas that are the most beneficial to keeping the services in place, making sure that each of these communities have good, reliable ambulance service, and that the dollars that get put in that are used in an efficient way that provide for good service and sustainable service going forward.
The best return on investment possible. James, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me today.
James Small is EMS Outreach Program Manager for the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. There is more conversation ahead on the challenges facing emergency medical services. Join in with your questions, your thoughts about first responders, 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin EMS Association represents more than 6,000 emergency medical services workers in hundreds of EMS organizations. We look at their funding challenges as lawmakers prepare to debate a new two-year state budget plan next month. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Alan DeYoung leads the Wisconsin EMS Association. Alan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So the association plans to ask the legislature for about $500 million as a baseline for statewide EMS funding. Can you explain what you're asking for from the legislature?
Yeah, we're not really concerned, where exactly the money comes with at this time, because we just know that there needs to be a base level of funding, because we, as James Small earlier kind of talked about, as we rely on volunteers so heavily, it's literally 79% of all departments in our state currently rely on volunteers to staff their schedules. And so we have this huge volunteer model, and we need the necessary funding kind of to start to move from a, you know, we're relying on volunteers and out of pocket to relying on, hey, we're actually going to pay people, hopefully, a living wage at some point here to provide the necessary life-saving services that they do.
Can you give us a sense of the level of time commitment from these volunteers? How much do volunteer EMS workers give of themselves?
Well, I can say most departments, when you volunteer, have some sort of requirement. They try to say, hey, at least, you know, volunteer, you know, 10 hours a month or something. But right now, a lot of those volunteers are kind of being pushed to their limits, where I literally spoke to an individual just a few months ago where, you know, she worked over 600 hours. And you say, how is that possible? Well, she covered 24/7, 6 days a week, because at the moment they have nobody else. She's got no other backup. They're down to their last three EMTs that are covering 24/7, 365, and not being paid. I mean, they're being paid a stipend at the moment of $3 an hour for those 600 hours in that month. So it can be pretty grueling for some volunteers, especially, you know, that individual being in their 60s, you know, hoping to retire, and yet we're still dependent on volunteers in that community.
When you say you want to at least establish a living wage for this workforce, for this largely volunteer workforce, what might that look like? What would be a living wage?
Well, the fact that we look at, you know, some of the other fast food retail that don't require any significant training in terms of a state license, and you have to go through a program, and they're making anywhere from 15 to almost 20 an hour in some cases in retail, yet we're asking people, you know, to save lives, work 24-hour shifts or even longer, and we're telling them, we're not going to pay you $4 an hour. We're not going to even pay you a minimum wage, and that's just due to the funding. There's a lack of funding that is there right now. I mean, we're not going to move immediately from volunteer to entirely paid. But I think there should be good movement towards getting to a model where, when we're recruiting for, you know, EMTs, paramedics, at any level, when we're recruiting for people, we're actually going to tell them, yeah, we can pay, you know, for you to go to school, or we can pay when you get out of school. And it's going to be something that you can at least live on in that area. So I would hope at a minimum it would be, a, you know, $15 an hour or more. But I know we're not going to get to that point immediately. But we're hoping for kind of a baseline to get started moving towards that.
How likely is that this $500 million of baseline funding, how likely do you think it is to be apportioned for statewide funding?
Well, we're obviously very hopeful because we're imploring legislators to look at the situation currently, you know, the kind of direness of staffing schedules, the calls being unanswered, and, you know, only due to basically staffing and not having those people. And then when one community, you know, can't staff their ambulance, they call for mutual aid, and that, you know, hurts other communities as well. It's good for short-term, you know, use only. But when we keep going that way, it's kind of a domino effect. So, you know, when we start seeing drop calls of, you know, a couple of calls that are being dropped, which, you know, could be a mother, could be a family member, could be a father who needs help. And that's, we're going to see those increase over time. And it's, I don't want to say it's a matter of time before somebody dies because of an unmissed call, but I mean, that's the reality of it. So we are hopeful that the legislature is listening and can understand the true direness of, we've been dependent on volunteers for a public service for so long that this model can't exist anymore in terms of purely volunteers in some areas. We need to give people a baseline.
Let's take stock, though, just for a moment here, because since February, the Evers administration tallied up and said that they've directed more than $69 million to support EMS providers in areas around the state. What impact has that money made?
So I'll say that definitely we're appreciative of that, because a lot of that funding actually went towards big equipment, you know, equipment. Life-saving equipment is not cheap. It is very expensive, like a Lucas device, which is, you know, does basically CPR, you know, automated CPR for first responders. Those devices are very expensive. And other things like UTVs, we're talking about in very rural areas that can't get an ambulance out to where they need to be to rescue somebody. They need a UTV. Again, very expensive equipment. A lot of these things have been pushed off and just said, well, we just can't buy it. We just don't have the money. So a lot of those funds went towards, I know, towards purchasing large equipment. They went towards trying to help get people into school. You know, maybe we can use that funding temporarily for training and getting people into a program. We not necessarily paying them afterwards in some areas, but at least we can do, you know, something with that money. So definitely it was appreciative, and it helped with getting a lot more equipment and supplies that are needed. And that's actually kind of why our ask is so much higher than that, because in order to establish a baseline, we need a substantial amount just so, hey, some of these rural areas, like you talked, James Small mentioned, don't have the tax base to go to referendum like we've seen many of. And so they need kind of the state to step in and provide some funding. Otherwise, those areas are going to get even more dire.
Alan DeYoung is executive director of the Wisconsin EMS Association. As we look at the challenges of Wisconsin's EMS system around the state, you can join in at 800-642-1234. The State Department of Health Services also earlier this year awarded $32 million in EMS flex grants to over 400 EMS providers. Have these flex grants been effective at all in addressing the issues in rural areas and in volunteerism in EMS?
Well, actually, kind of that's the funding I was kind of mentioning earlier.
Okay.
Purchasing those equipment and supplies that are needed. I know a lot of the flex grants went towards things like that.
I see. Okay. What about EMS being an essential service in Wisconsin? What impact would that designation make?
Well, we've pushed for that in many years, and we still hope it becomes an essential service. Currently, it's 14 states in the United States that are considered essential. Some of them have funding tied to their essential status, and some of them do not. And so that's why if we made EMS essential by state law, it doesn't necessarily mean there's funding that'll go along with it, and which that puts the burden back on the communities to, you know, go to a referendum, try to, you know, get past any type of levy limits in any way that way, because, like I said, it's hard to tax a community of, let's say, 62 people, like one of our smallest towns in Wisconsin here. They're not going to vote to tax themselves, you know, hundreds of dollars more just to have an EMS department. And so there needs to be some type of state funding that, you know, allows for, you know, some coverage in multiple communities. If there needs to be consolidation, some areas their consolidation doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need that funding kind of across the board.
My thoughts keep going back to this EMS, volunteer EMS provider working 24/7 for days on end. But if there is a low volume of 911 calls that require an ambulance in rural areas, and you just don't have that volume, that too would be an issue as you try to address the balance for what is necessary, and you look at consolidation. How do you make that tricky balance when you don't have the volume of calls?
It's normally, you know, looking at what is it a kind of an appropriate response time. I mean, you can kind of take an example of just in the city of Milwaukee, they've had to raise the appropriate, like what's an acceptable level of response time from 30 minutes to allow an acceptable level of an hour. And that seems kind of extreme when you say I'm dialing 911, minutes count, seconds count. And so especially in many rural communities, you can't have a station everywhere. So you have to look at what's the appropriate amount of time that you can still take action on something or get to the scene, and then as well as get to a hospital, because in many areas, we have some counties that have just one hospital, and that's it. So you need to be able to look at the access, you know, to EMS as one factor in terms of covering multiple communities. And that's where some areas, too, they struggle a little bit because it's a 30-minute ride, you know, from the station to the scene, and then another 30 minutes to the hospital. And we're relying on, I could say, in those areas, EMTs versus saying, hey, we if we had more funding, we can rely on a paramedic level or something like that to be able to, you know, stabilize the patient more because they're able to do more in their scope.
Mm.
But right now, we're in those areas, we're not even paying them.
Alan, thank you for bringing this issue forward, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Alan DeYoung is Executive Director of the Wisconsin EMS Association. And earlier, we talked with James Small from the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.